Bokeh tov, world, and a happy tuba to all. Today's daf is Sechet Chulin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf tzadik, which is a great, great way to begin a tuba of. Amech Kulam tzadikim, and we got up to the third line. So what we said yesterday was that the way to understand why. Even if it's not bevat achat, why gid hanasha would be chal on other chiyuvim is simply because it is more chomer because it was noeg b'ven noach. That's how we came out. Today, the Gemara is troubled by that answer because it turns out that the only man d'yoma who holds that halacha that we consider things to be more chomer to be chal on an iser chomer is the Reb Yehuda, the sheet of Reb Yehuda, which we'll see in a minute from the Mishnah later on. And the problem is that our Mishnah, actually, we've already established, does not go according to Reb Yehuda. Because that's Gufa, the Mishnah later on, which is the continuation. Man shamat le'la ha'isvar. Who is the Man d'Yomar that is the prime exponent of this idea? That's something that is a chomer because it was given at the time before Kabbalah Sotera, therefore it would be chal on another Isra. And there's no problem of ein Isra chal al Isra. I'll tell you who that is. That is Reb Yehuda, which appears later on in the Mishnah, which we'll see next week. And according to Reb Yehuda, that works out perhaps, but our Mishnah is not like Reb Yehuda, because our Mishnah says beferish that it's noheg b'vimav chaya, which is fine, but it also says b'yerach sheyamin b'yerach shel smol. And we know that Rabbi Yehuda, as we saw before, is dafkan man d'yomer who holds that it's eino noheg ela ba'achatz, and hada'at noteh, that achatz is the right. But certainly it's not both on the right and the left. So how could you say that our Mishnah is Rabbi Yehuda if it's not? Well, that's not a problem. I mean, the Tana of the Mishnah may not be personally Rabbi Yehuda, but he may hold like Rabbi Yehuda in this one issue, namely, that something that is there from before Kabbalah Sotera is more chamor, but he doesn't hold with him about the Gid HaNasha being in both sides. I mean, what's the big deal? But let me ask you something. Even Reb Yehuda himself, who espoused this svara, right? And he said, well, if it's chamor because it was there from before Kabbalah Sotera, so then it's more chamor. The thing is that the only time that Reb Yehuda said that was in the Mishnah later, which actually is discussing the question of whether non-kosher meat, non-kosher species, would also have a din of Gid HaNasha. So he said that it would, and that the Isser Gid HaNasha would be chal even on the Isser of Behemah Tmeah, because it's more chomer since it was given to B'nai Noach. Right? That's where Reb Yehuda actually said his fundamental statement of that sheet. The problem is that to assert that something is chomer enough to be chal on an iser behemah tmeah does not mean that you would hold that something is chomer enough to be chal on an iser karet, right? Because iser behemah tmeah is an iser lav. So you may be telling me that relative to other lavim, this din of Gid HaNasha is more chomer. But that doesn't mean that relative to an iser that could bring a chiyuv of karet, such as the iser of mukdashim. I mean, that would mean that if it turns into pigul or notar or your tameh and you eat it, in all those cases, you'd be chayav karet. And you're claiming that that's what Reb Yehuda would hold. But there's nothing in what Reb Yehuda said that allows you to assume that. Because the most that you heard about relative chumrah was the relative chumrah of Gid HaNasha to an Isra Lav, like an Isra Behemah, which is an Isra Lav, a Behemah Tmeah. But Mashenkin, when it comes to Kachim, that can easily turn into an Isra Karet. Did you ever hear that Reb Yehuda would say that the Gid HaNasha would be chal on a, I'd say it's relatively more chumrah even than an Isra Karet, despite the fact that it does not entail any kind of Karet? Certainly, you can't say that. Okay, so then now we're back to where we started. That means that even according to Rabbi Yehuda, we do not have a basis for Gina Nasha being able to be chal on a kachim, and it's a kachim that was there before. Okay, so then that doesn't make sense, because it means that our whole approach is wrong, because what we were trying to say was that the Mishnah is referring to the Gina Nasha of a carbon shalomim, let's say, that had a baby, right? So there we said, okay, the Ginanasha comes later, because that tissue that ultimately hardens into something that would have the din of a Ginanasha is a chomer, and it will be chal. Now we don't have that answer, so now we're going to have to give another possible explanation of the Mishnah by saying it's talking about a different case. It's no longer talking about a carbon shlomi, but you know what it could be talking about? It could be talking about an animal that's pregnant and that is about to give birth to its firstborn. And that firstborn, if it's a bechor, if it's a male, will be kodesh as it is born. As it comes out of the womb, it takes on kedusha, right? So, okay, so let's assume that's the case, and we'll see what the implications would be. Since it becomes kodesh as it's born, and it goes through the cervix, at that point, it becomes kodesh. So if that would be the case, then that would mean that if the bechor is born as a kodesh animal, then it would make sense that the gid hanasha also would be there. Because the gid hanasha, if we assume that the gid hanasha is chal on a shlil, which is basically the way that the Tanakhama of this Mishnah holds, that there is an Isser Shlil. So if that's the case, the Gid HaNasha was Chal first, before the Bechor was born. And therefore, even if you hold, like Rabbi Yehuda, that the Gid HaNasha is not Chal on a Shlil, then it would mean that it comes at least together with the Bechor, the moment that it's born. That would be Rabbi Yehuda. And if you hold like the Tanakhama and the Gid HaNasha is actually not is chal on a shlil, so then it came first, so then of course it would be chal even on the kach. So maybe that's the way. Well, of course it's more limited, because we'll have to say that it's referring dafka to a mevakeret is the case of the chal on the kach. But so what? Or you know what, I could give you a broader explanation. I could tell you like this. Ibaitima. Let's go back to the case that we said. The case that we said was, it's talking about a carbon shlomim that had a baby. Now, the thing is, remember that we have a machloket, and I believe that Gavi actually, or Ori, wrote this down yesterday, about v'lodos kachim b'havayatan in kedoshim, or v'lodos kachim b'me'e iman in kedoshim, right? So if you hold that we could be talking about a case where it's referring to indeed a vlad, and you hold like the Mandi Yomar that vlades kachim only become kodesh as they are born. The reason we use those words, by the way, bahavayatan, which is a rather strange way to refer to being born, but that is the lashon of the pasuk, and that's why we use this word, because it says rak kodeshecha asher yiulach. That yiulach means bahavayatan. So we use the words of the pasuk in order to paraphrase it. But in any event, let's say that it's only when they are born. So then that would turn all of the cases of v'lodos kachim into the equivalent of a mevakeret, right? So that would mean that the gid hanasha, which comes while it's still, if you hold, again, according to the Tanakhama, it came into effect even while it was a shlil, and even if you hold, according to Reb Yehuda, that it only takes effect as it's born, which would be at the same time, so then there would be no problem. We basically have turned, if we hold by Havayatan and Kedoshim, we've turned all of the Vladeis Kachim into the equivalent of the case of the Mevakeret. So it works out fine. Okay, now, when we say that it's chal on kachim, does that mean that it affects kachim in terms of the mizbeach, or does that mean it affects kachim in terms of we who are going to be eating these kachim? I mean, the difference would be whether a carbon oila that has a gid hanasha in it, as is the case with most carbon oilas, would we have to take out that Giranasha before we put the meat of the Korban Olah on the Mizbeach, right? So Amar Reb Chiya Bar Yosef, when the Mishnah talked about the Giranasha being chal on Kachim, it was not referring to a Korban Olah vis-a-vis the Mizbeach. It was referring to the Kachim that a Kohen or Yisrael is going to eat. So we have a Korban Chatas, a Shlomim, an Asham. So either the Bailam will eat this or the Kayanim will eat this, but that's what we're saying. They're not allowed to eat the Giranasha of that animal, and the Giranasha Isser was chal on Kodesh. But Kodshim She'enan Ne'echalim, if you're talking about a Korban Olah, and you're trying to tell me that the Giranasha of a Korban Olah is not put on the Mizbeach, no, that's not what it means. Ein Isser Gid Nohig Ben, it never says anywhere that Lo yochal hamizbeach at Giranasha. It says lo yochlu b'nei Yisrael at Giranasha. So why would there be an iser to put it on an achilas hamizbeach? That's what I say, says Reb Chiya Bar Yosef. But Reb Yochanan says, oh no, doesn't matter whether we're talking about a korban oila vis-a-vis the mizbeach or whether we're talking about a korban that is neachal either by the bailim or by the kohanim. Echad kodashim ha-neachalim, v'echad kodashim she'inan neachalim, the iser gid is noheg on all of those cases. And, says Rav Papa, I do not believe that they're even arguing. They're not arguing. They're talking about different things. Rabbi Yochanan was saying that you would be chayev in terms of eating it, lahalakoto, if you eat the gid ha-nasha. Doesn't matter on what kind of animal you eat it, you would still be over on Giranasha, which would mean you would get specific malchus if somebody gave you a hatra'ah, don't eat that because it's a Giranasha. So then it would be chal even on a korban olah that you ate. Kan l'ha'aloto. So when he say, Reb Chiya Bar Yosef, when he says that there's no din on kachim that are ena nechalim, he means there's no issur to put the Giranasha of an ayla on the mizbeach, but he doesn't mean that you're not going to be chayev on the Giranasha if you would eat the Giranasha. So he agrees with that. When Rabbi Yochanan never disagreed with that. When he says it does apply to an ayla, he means if you ate the Giranasha of an ayla and that's what we gave you hatra'ah for, then that's what you would be giving. You would get malchus for it. Why wouldn't it be chal on an oila? This is how Rav Papa understands it. Now, some say that that's not what Rav Papa said, and that actually Rav Papa said that Omer Rav Papa, they're not arguing, but for a different point. What Rav Papa was referring to is that both of them are talking about, both Rav Chiya Bar Yosef and Rav Yochanan, are referring to the question of whether the Korban Olah is put on the Mizbeach. Yes, but the difference between them is they're talking about different things. Reb Chiya Bar Yosef, when he says, well, there's no din of a Giranasha on an Olah, he doesn't mean there's no din at all of a Giranasha. He means you don't tear out the Giranasha from the Yarech of a Korban Olah before you put it on the Mizbeach. Masha Einkein Rabbi Yochanan, who says, no, you're not allowed to. He did mean you're not allowed to even put it on the Mizbeach. But what he meant was that after you take out the Giranasha, which we all agree you have to take out the Giranasha, it's usher to burn it on the Mizbeach. So if you have a separate Giranasha, you've taken it out. And of course, you cannot put it on the Mizbeach. And when Reb Chiya says it doesn't apply, he meant it doesn't apply to take it out. That would be how to understand Rav Papa. Whereas Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak says completely different. He says, no, the machlokas is gufa about whether you bring it up on the Mizbeach, even when it's still inside the Yarech. Forget about needing to take it out or not. They are arguing about whether you have to take it out or not. And I'll show you. I'll prove this to you, said Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. There is definitely a machlokas about whether you need to take out the Gid Hanasha before you bring it onto the Mizbeach. Take a look at these two brightot and you'll see. Now, it's not an immediate proof. So you have to have a little patience till he goes through the various brightot that he wants to bring. So take a look at this. says Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak. The Tanya, V'hiktir HaKohen et HaKol HaMizbecha. So what is the HaKol HaMizbecha that we're saying? It's HaKol means everything. So obviously, you could have just said HiKtiro HaMizbecha. If you're telling me HaKol HaMizbecha, so you're coming to add things that we would not necessarily have assumed are supposed to be put on the Mizbeach, right? Now, what is that coming to include? Talmud Lomar, that comes to include everything. Literally, you bring the bones, you bring the gidim, you bring the horns, you bring the tlafayim, you bring the hooves of the korban arlana. Those things are not really meat, but you put them on the Mizbeach anyway. Now, you might think that they should be put on the Mizbeach even if they're no longer part of the organism. Yochel afilu parshus, if they were cut off before, you should still put them on the Mizbeach? No, because there's also the pasuk, V'asita olotecha habasar v'hadam, which makes it very clear we're only talking about the meat. We're not talking about putting horns on the Mizbeach. If we would only have that pasuk, basar v'hadam, so then I would think that means, okay, that means you have to cut out anything else. You've got to cut out those horns, you've got to cut out even the various gidim and take out the bones. You have to debone the meat before you put it on the Mizbeach, because it says HaBosar Adam only. No. On the other hand, remember, Talmud Lomar V'Hiktir HaKohen Et HaKol HaMizbeach, so we're told that you bring up the entire animal. So I'd explain the contradiction here. Well, obviously, what it means is that so long as these things are actually part of the animal that you're bringing up, they're mechubarim, you don't take them off. But if they were taken separated off, they're parshu, then even if they're brought all the way on the top of the Mizbeach and they were only parshu, then they're going to have to come down off of the Mizbeach. Okay, now remember that we have a lot of things which are called im olu lo yerdu. So this is a chiddush. There's many things, once they're brought up, they're not brought down. So in this case, afilu barosh hashem mizbeach, that means even if they were olu, they need to be yerdu. Fine. Now, so far I haven't proven anything, says Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak. You got to have a little patience, and I'm going to prove to you that this is a machlokes, because man tana d'shamet lady amar parshu yerdu. Tell me who it is that we know that says that if these atzamot were separated off of the meat, that they would need to come off of the Mizbeach, even if they were there. That is definitely the shita of Rebbe. Okay, how do I know that? Tanya, this is a different brayta. V'hiktir HaKohen et HaKol, what is HaKol? L'rabot ha'atzamot v'hagidin v'hakarnayim v'atlafayim v'afilu parshu. Now, this is obviously not like that first brayta, right? So this brayta is saying, even if the horns had been taken off, that still marba, that it's supposed to be hiktir HaKohen et HaKol, even if they're separated. So then how do you explain the pasuk of asita olotecha habasar v'hadam? Didn't we actually just say in the previous brayta that it's actually is only the basar v'hadam, and we use that to tell me that you don't put it up? No, that's not talking about if it was separated. That's talking about poking. Now remember the deal of poking. Poking means that if it was burned already and the fire of the Mizbeach was on it, and now because of the heat, it pops off of the Mizbeach. Those were the poking. So over there, if it was actually put onto the Mizbeach and the fire of the Mizbeach was already on it, so then most of the time we say poking, machzirin, poking to the top of the Mizbeach, whether they're ra'ui or not. So the Tanakhama is saying that when it's mashman, that it's not put on the Mizbeach, doesn't mean it's not put on in the first place. It means it's not put on again on the Mizbeach in the event that it popped off. That's what it's referring to. So therefore, bottom line, what does this mean? It means ikulei basar atamachzir, pieces of meat that popped off of the Mizbeach. Yes, habasar v'adam, you've got to put back on. Back on. Back on. But You don't put back on things that are themselves not actually consumable. They are not put back on in the event that they popped off, but they are certainly initially put onto the Mizbeach. Rebbe says, I disagree with your interpretation, because I understand the meaning as follows. So one pasuk says everything, which means everything, riba, including the horns and the hooves and so on. The other pasuk, as you pointed out so rightly, says, V'yasita olotecha basar v'adam. That's a miut. So we've got one pasuk being marve, and one pasuk being memayit. So how do we explain that? I say, mechubarim ya'alu. So this is Rebbe Shita, was that first brighter that we had brought. If they're still attached to the body of the ola, so they're part of the meat, then they should be brought up to the Mizbeach initially. But if they were partial, even if they were partial after they were already brought up to the top of the Mizbeach, afil barosh shel Mizbeach, they have to be yerdu. So according to Rebbe, both vasito lotecha basar v'adam and hakol ha-Mizbeach are referring to putting it up on the Mizbeach l'chatchila. And the only differences between the two psukim is whether they're still attached to the meat. Now, she'en ken, according to the Rabbanan here, the Tanakama, they are referring to Dafka when they were already on the Mizbeach, burnt on the Mizbeach, but they popped off of the Mizbeach. That is the Machlokas. So that means that Rebbe was the Tana of that first Braita, who said that Atzamot v'Gidim, that are not together with the actual meat, are not put on the Mizbeach l'chatchila, and according to the Rabbanan, they are put on the Mizbeach. Now let me prove my point, says Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, and I will show you, once you understand why the Rabbanan understood the pasuk the way it is, that even if the Gidim v'Atzamot and the Karnot and the Tafayim were separated off, that they're still put on the Mizbeach, and I'm going to do that, and by my doing this, I am going to show you that Rebbe is talking about actually putting the Gidan Nosha while it's in the Yarech on the Mizbeach, and that's the machlokas between Rebbe and the Rabbanan. Here's how I'm going to show it to you. Now that you've got all the data, so you understand the machlokas, let me explain the machlokas, and that will prove my point, okay? So now, why do you think that the Rabbanan wouldn't understand the pasuk the way Rebbe understands the pasuk? Rebbe says, the contradiction in the pasuk between the ribui of et hakol ha-mizbech and the miut of Basar v'hadam. He says, the first stage is, do you bring it to the Mizbeach or not? So why did Rabbanan ignore that? Why do they say, no, that's not what it's referring to. It's definitely allowing you to go to the Mizbeach. You can only use Pasuk for the minimum amount of information. So, what would give you the right to assume that you can actually put it up there? Say the Rabbanan, because I don't need a Pasuk to tell me that Hakol HaMizbecha includes the bones and the Gidim. I know that you put those up on the Mizbeach. How do I know that? Because the Torah said to bring up the Rosh of the Ola. Remember, it says, Et Rosho ve'et Pidro. Now, have you ever seen a head without a skull? That's pretty rough. So if you're going to bring up the Rosh of Mizbeach, you're bringing up a bone, aren't you? Okay, so then the Torah says, bring up the bone when it's Mechubar. That's a given. So now when this pasuk starts discussing whether you bring up bones, it's not referring to bones that are Mechubar, obviously. It's referring to even when they're not Mechubar. And it's telling you if you've got a thigh bone that has been taken off, the meat has been deboned, you still have to put it up on the Mizbeach. That one is what it must mean. So miti dehavya rosh ha-shalola. So I don't need a pasuk. Okay, so then what was the pasuk coming to be marba? Oh, the pasuk must be coming to be marba when they were detached. That's the point. And how does Rebbe deal with this argument? And now at last we get to the crux of the issue of Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. Rebbe says, oh, no, actually, the way I understand it, is, of course I agree with you that you don't need a pasuk for bones and gidim. What do you think, I'm stupid? I wasn't referring to just any gidim. I was referring to the gidanasha. So mechuborim de hetera, if there's no iser in this meat, fine. I agree with you. You do learn that out of the Rosh of the Olah. But I'm saying you need a pasuk to be marba. Even things that are usher are supposed to be brought up on the Mizbeach. And that is what ki itzrich kra legid hanasheh b'mechubar, that as long as the gid hanasheh is actually part of the thigh, so then you can actually learn from this pasuk, which says hakol ha-mizbecha. I need a pasuk to tell me that that gid hanasheh, despite its being usher, is put up on the mizbeach. And therefore, if I have the pasuk that says only pasuk v'dam, I interpret that pasuk to mean the question of whether things that are not mechubarim, can they be brought up? And I say, no, things that are not mechubarim cannot be brought up. When the pasuk is needed to bring up, even though we already know that you bring up bones and gidim, is dafka legid hanasheh, and it's coming to tell me, you bring up that thigh with its gid hanasheh, and you don't take it off. That's the point. And you're able to put that on the mizbeach. So why don't the Rabbanan actually agree to what Rebbe is saying? So here we've got a completely different issue that we never thought of. That issue is not quite, technically speaking, whether Gid Anasha is Chal on Mugdash. But Gid Anasha is definitely Chal on you and me, right? Well, since the Pasuk in Yechezkel insists that the only thing that you could put on the Mizbeach are things that you yourself could eat, because the Lashon of the Pasuk, the famous Lashon of the Pasuk, and I believe that our own dear Gavi has written this down, is the concept of Mashke Yisrael. So what does the Pasuk say? V'se achat min atzon min amatayim mi Mashke Yisrael. What does that mean? You can only bring things that were things that a Ben Yisrael would feel comfortable making a party out of. Well, he's not going to feel comfortable making a party out of a gid hanasheh because he's not allowed to eat it. So therefore, only things that are actually brought, that are kosher to bring to your table, are kosher to bring to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's table, kevayochol. And therefore, forget about the question of whether it is specific gid hanasheh applying to kachin. You cannot bring a gid hanasheh up on the mizbeach because of Mashke Yisrael, which means min hamutar li Yisrael. So gid hanasheh can definitely not be part on the mizbeach, even if it's still inside the yorech. Could you eat a gid hanasheh just because it's in the yorech? No. So you can't put it on the mizbeach just because it's in the yorech. That's a given. Whereas Rebbe says, well, that doesn't necessarily apply. I mean, after all, you do put the chelev on the mizbeach for the emurim, don't you? You do put dam on the mizbeach, don't you? Do you bring those things on your table? No. So obviously, Mashke Yisrael does not exclude everything. So it must be that the iser of Mashke Yisrael is only where the entire animal is in kosher. So let's say it's a treifa, right? So then I understand that's not Mashke Yisrael. But it's not coming to identify the parts of an animal that are kosher. I mean, that's ridiculous. It's almost a given. I mean, the very things that are usher to you are usher, like chelev, because they're put on the mizbeach. So that doesn't make sense, what you're arguing. Says the Rabbanan, oh my gosh, pure sophistry. Obviously, mitzvasam bekacha shinei. If the whole point of the carbon is to bring the chelev and the dam, so what are you bringing the raya? Well, Mashke Yisrael doesn't make it usher to bring the chelev and the dam. Come on. I mean, this is the whole mitzvah. So mitzvah san bekaka shiny. That is very different. So you can't use a raya for the busser and the chelev. But when it comes to the gid hanasheh, so the gid hanasheh, in fact, they would say to Rebbe, it's also because of Mashke Yisrael. But anyway, do you now agree with me, says Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak? Do you now see that the question of Gidan Nasha being put on the Mizbeach, even while it is inside the Yorech, you see that the Samachlokas? I'm bringing you, Rabbi and Rabbanan. Once you understand what the Machlokas is, there's no way that you could possibly deny that there is a Machlokas Tanoim about whether the Gidan Nasha is put on the Mizbeach, even if it's inside of the Yorech. That's this Machlokas that we just say. Do we aser it because of Mashke Yisrael, or do we not? Omer Avuna, look, I mean, right now, there is clearly a Machlokas Amoraim, at least, Legabe, what do you actually do in practical terms? You're bringing a carbon. What do you do with the Gidan Nasha? Omer Avuna, the Gidan Nasha has to be taken out. And it's taken out while you're on the top of the Mizbeach. And what you do is, the Gidan Nasha Shel Ola, you take it out of the Yarech and you throw it onto the Tapuach. You remember what the Tapuach is. We're going to review it again. But the Tapuach is the mound that we call the apple, so to speak, in the middle of the Mizbeach. So it's the mound of all of the ash that has been gathering there, because what we did every day with the Trumas Hadeshan was only one shovelful that was done as a specific truma. And that wasn't brought to the Beit Hadeshan. That was put on the floor next to the Kevesh, where it was absorbed into the ground. And then only when there was a massive pile of ash on the Mizbeach, and that was a covet for the Mizbeach to show how many korbanos were brought. So we didn't want to make the Mizbeach every single day flattened out from its ashes. So that Tapuach, as we're going to see, would be left until it was really big. But anyway, so what do you do with the Gidan Nasha? On the top of the Mizbeach, you take it out of the Yorech and you throw it onto the Tapuach. Omer of Chista, Mari Dechi, my God, whoever made that mimer, I mean, how can you say such a thing? Why would you have to take the Gidan Nasha out of the Yarech? Mi Ketiv, does it say anywhere in the Torah, Al Kain Lo Yochal HaMizbeach Et Gidan Nasha? I challenge you to show me that pasuk. The only pasuk I know of is Al Kain Lo Yochlu B'nei Yisrael Et Gidan Nasha. So I don't get it. Why in the world are we talking about taking something out of the Yarech while it's on the Mizbeach? It sounds nutty. There's no Iser for the Mizbeach to eat the Gidan Nasha. So how'd you get that? So what does Rav Huna say? He says, no, you're right. There is no Iser of Gidan Nasha on the Mizbeach. But there is an Iser to put things that are usher for B'nai Yisrael on the Mizbeach. So if it said, Al Kein Lo Yochlu B'nai Yisrael, and it says in Yechezkel Mimashke Yisrael, so then that is effectively telling me I can't put the Gidan Nasha on the Mizbeach. So what's your problem? By the way, there is a lot of discussion among the Achronim as to whether what I just said is true, or whether there's a way of fetching the Gemara that because of Mashke Yisrael, it means that there actually is a specific Iser Gidan Nasha. I don't want to get into that. The Gemara makes sense even as stated, even though it's not a really accurate way of understanding Gidan Nasha's Halal Mukdashim. That's the problem that the Achronim have. I mean, the Mishnah says Gidan Nasha is Chal, and you're saying, no, it's not that Gidan Nasha is Chal, it's that Mashke Yisrael is Chal, and Memela Gidan Nasha is Chal, and that's not an accurate understanding of the Mishnah. Do you understand why this would be a problem? Okay, but again, the Sugya doesn't take this particular issue up, and it seems to be tailored just on Mashke Yisrael. Meisve. So how could Rav Huna say that the Gidan Nasha was usher because of Mashke Yisrael? Where, take a look at the Braita, Gidan Nasha Shel Shlamim. So here it says, if you've got a Gidan Nasha of a carbon Shlamim, the Chabdu Lama. So then, look, the Shlamim's Yorech is not put on the Mizbeach, obviously, because no Basar of the Shlamim is put on the Mizbeach. So what do you do with it? You take it out of the Yorech. I mean, obviously, the Kohanim are not going to be able to eat it. and you're mechabdu lama. So you just sweep it into the ama, was the drain, the flowing drain. It had this the water, remember, that would go through the actual azora, so that all of the blood would go down to Nachal Kidron and so on. So remember, they used to wash out the azora by simply closing the exit of the drain to the ama. And that, what you do is you throw this into that, and it takes out the Gid HaNasha into Nachal Kidron, which anyway was made for fertilizing and was sold to people that they would be able to use it, and Beis Din would get the money from it. Now, what do you do with the Gid HaNasha of an Oila? Shel Shla Oila Ma'aleyu. You put it up on the Mizbeach. And you said, Ravuna, that you can't put it up on the Mizbeach. I mean, I'm assuming if it says you put it up on the Mizbeach, it means you put it up and you burn it on the Mizbeach. I mean, why else are you bringing it up to the Mizbeach? No, says Ravuna. It doesn't mean you put it on the Mizbeach to burn. It means you put it on the Mizbeach. But once you get to the top of the Mizbeach, you take it out of the Yarech and you throw it onto the Tapuach, like I said. Well, that's crazy. I mean, if you're going to tear it out, why do you schlep it up to the top of the Mizbeach and tear it out on top of the Mizbeach? I mean, the Mizbeach is not a butcher shop. You should prepare the Yarech before and bring it up like that. No, no. Because Mishum Shenemar, remember the Pasuk, Hakriveu na lebichatecha, hayirtzecha. Try bringing a piece of meat that looks like that to Trump. You think he's going to eat that? It looks like a piece of garbage cut up into pieces like that. Why, they wouldn't even put it on the Trumpmobile. So since it says, Akriveu na lepechatecha, it would be a bizoyan of kachim to do it that way. Therefore, I never meant you bring it up as a carbon. I meant you bring it up in a mizbeach properly. And there, when nobody's looking, as you're about to put the yarech on the flames of the mizbeach, you take out the Gid HaNasha, throw it onto the tapuach, and then it would be burnt. And in fact, we have a raya in the Braita exactly to what Ravuna said. Tanika Vazir Ravuna. Gid HaNasha shel shlamim mechabdo la'ama v'shel ola. Here the Braita says, chotso letapuach. So the ma'aleo clearly means what it was that Ravuna claimed it means. Not ma'aleo to burn, but rather ma'aleo in order for it to be chalutz and thrown onto the tapuach. Anyway, once we talk about the tapuach, let's just remember those special dinim that we had heard about, or the stories we had heard about the tapuach in Tamid, and we learned over there, there's the Mishnah there that says, tapuach haya be'emtza ha-mizbeach, and they would let this tapuach grow so large that pa'amim ha-yalav kishlosh me'et kur. Sometimes you could have on a 300 core, which is ridiculous because, I mean, that would be so enormous. It would like have to, if you were going to turn it into a pile, it would be immensely high, which is a little ridiculous. I mean, it's mamish comical. So it's a guzma, says Rav. It doesn't really mean that. And as you know, we've seen so many places where the number 300 is used as an indication that we don't mean this seriously. It's like you would say in the, oh, there's millions of them. So you want to say that in the Mishnah, you say there's 300 of them. That is the lesson of exaggeration. So it's talking about hyperbole, basically. And there's another Mishnah that we had over there in Tamid, where it also uses like hyperbole, and that was Hishkuet HaTamid B'Koshel Zahav. So they would give an animal water to drink before Shvita. You know, they do that also to humans. What's your last request? So they give him his last cigarette, you know, because it's easier to kill him that way because he's one step closer to dying anyway. So the same thing is true when you ask a behemoth, so what's your last request? Just a drink of water, man. Little does the behemoth know that you give him the water so it'll be easier to skin his hide after you shecht him. Sounds like the KGB, they'll make you pay for the bullet. But anyway, the point is that they would use a golden cup because of the covet of the carbon to give it the water, because it was the carbon tamid and was very chashiv, and so they would give it the water beforehand. And that too, that's a guzman. It doesn't mean a golden cup. It just means they wouldn't use a paper cup like Rav Moshe says. You don't use that for the Tilas Yadayim. I said they wouldn't use a paper cup. Actually, before I should say it means they wouldn't use even a coffee mug, a Kli Shel Cheres. But it doesn't mean necessarily it has to be gold. It could be silver, maybe zinc, polished copper, or Barnea suggesting plastic, apparently showing us a dugma. Rabbi Yami, this is basically our parsha. I mean, certainly the Daf Yomi was scheduled properly, Bilamala. So we know that the Torah itself uses hyperbole. Dibra Torah, Loshon Havai. Dibra Nevi'im, Loshon Havai. Dibra Chachomim, Loshon Havai. Where do we see the Chachomim? What we just said. Adi Amora. We just said the two cases over there. We said Shalosh Be'ot Kur, or the case of Ishkut HaTamid in the Kershel Zahav. We said that that is certainly Guzma. Guzma is hyperbole. And where do we see Dibra Torah, Lashon Havai? Well, because Moshe Rabbeinu said, Arim Gedolot Uvitzurot Bashamayim. I mean, so I understand if you want to be writing in the New York Times, you talk about skyscrapers. I mean, come on, skyscraper. Okay, but it's hyperbole. But the Torah should use the word skyscraper. Yes, it's a skyscraper. It's actually Bashamayim. Or how about when they made Shlomo HaMelech the king, and they made a big party because they wanted to make everybody, let everybody know that Adonio is a usurper. So it says over there that party was making so much noise. Vatibaka ha'aretz bekolam, the earth split because of the noise. I mean, come on. It does sometimes sound like that outside, but certainly it doesn't really mean literally. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak bar Nachmani, Amar Shmuel, I can tell you, there's actually three paces. I don't agree with the way you understood it before. I don't think that the Tamid Bekoshel Zahav is a guzma. I believe you can only say something if is a guzma where it's not really possible. Could they have given the Tamid Bekoshel Zahav? Yeah, why not? I mean, like, if you're telling me there's a din to be mechabed, what's the big deal to use a kosher zahav? I mean, there were plenty of kosher zahav. So why do you have to say it's a guzma? Because your imagination is challenged by the amount of kavod that we're going to give the carbon tamid? Who cares about your imagination? You don't have a right to assume something is a guzma. So chuck that, okay? You want to know where the chachamim speak in Lashon Havai? There's three places and only three places, not yours. First of all, we had the Mishnah about the Tapuach. Yes, that's impossible. It would be ridiculous to have a Mizbeach with a gigantic pillar like in the middle of the Vatican, in the middle of the Mizbeach. That's absurd. It's not really possible. I mean, how would we support it and what would prevent it from falling apart? That's hyperbole. Yes, the Tapuach. Then there was the other Mishnah about the Geffen, and then there was the other Mishnah about the Parochet, and I'm going to tell you what they are. So the Tapuach, okay, we said that Mishnah from Tamid. The Geffen. So the Geffen is a Mishnah in Midot, and what it says over there is that they made a grapevine out of pure gold, and they hung that. They had it over the Pitcho Shel Heichal, and they had these a trellis. It was looking like a regular grapevine, and that anybody who would bring gold to as a gift to the Beis HaMikdash, they would hang it on this grapevine so that it looked like it was growing gold, just as a covet for the Beis HaMikdash to show the various donations that there were. So Mudla Gabikunasot, so it was actually hung to be able to take the weight of the gold. And Kol Misha Yamit Nadev, Gardir, or Ishkol, if somebody wanted his gift to be public, so he would make a cluster of grapes out of gold, or even just a single grape out of gold, and they would hang this on this Eshkol. He would be Mevi Vitolabo, the Kohanim would put it on. And Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadik said that once there was so much gold on that grapevine that nimnu ala shalosh meos. Now again, we have our notification that I'm exaggerating. 300 kohanim were needed just to carry off the gold. It weighed so much, which is ridiculous because the whole thing would obviously have collapsed if it weighed that much. There's no possible way that the soft metal gold, even if it was on a trellis, was going to be able to support something that needed 300 people to carry. It's ridiculous. So that is definitely a hyperbole. And what's the Mishnah about the parochet? Well, the parochet, that's the Mishnah in Shkolim. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel omer mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Asigan. The parochet was so thick, it was a tefach thick, and it had to be woven on 72 different heddles. And I'll call nima venima, every single thread in each one of those heddles was so thick that it had 24 different chutim, because remember that the way that you needed to make, it's clear in the pasuk, we learned this in the Gemara in Yuma, that everything was kofel shesh. So you had the tchelas, shesh literally means six, so the tchelas was six, the argaman was six, the tolat shani was six, and the shesh was six, and that is 4 times 6 is 24, that needed to be put into one thick thread. So that means each one of the threads that was used in the weave was 24 threads thick. That's why the parochet was a tefach thick. And al kol nima v'nima 24 chutim orka 40 amma, so it was 40 amas long, to cover the height, and it was 20 amos wide, rochba 20 ba'ama, to cover the width of the doorway, and it would be made from shmonim ushte ribu naaseh, or some have the girsa, shmonim v'shtayim ribu, with a hay. If it's with a hay, it means you had 82 chicks, meaning pretty girls, would work on this parochet. And if it's rebo, it means 10,000, which would mean it was 820,000 threads. It would be referring to the threads, not how many people were working on it. V'shtayim osim b'shana, they would make two every year to keep it clean and new. And in order to put it into the mikvah, if it became tameh, you needed 300 kohanim to hold it, to get it into the mikveh and out of the mikveh. Well, that is also hyperbole. And again, it's said as 300 in order to be megala that it actually was being said as hyperbole. Where is Alon? Hey, remember this guy told us over Shabbos that somebody turned his house into a parochas weaving company, and he turned his entire house into this size heddles, and he's busy making a parochet. Who was that?
So there's a video that came out of a Tisha B'Av by the OU that was following all the different ground root initiatives. What was his name?
I have to get back to one of those initiatives, right?
One of those like ground root and grassroots initiatives.
Oh, I thought it was someone local.
No, no, no. It's in Petach, not Petach Tikva, in Hod HaSharon. Hod HaSharon, the guys.
Wow.
So his wife's doing, he's building the Amudim for the gate, because he says, he also, it's all going to come down Shemayim, but we have to finish it. We have to do the parochet and the gates.
Right. Apparently, people all over the world are working on different pieces that will be necessary for the Beis HaMikdash, including there's a place that is actually training the Kohanim on a dugma of the Mizbeach. So they actually bring these ersatz karbonas so that they should get used to all of the avodas and shouldn't get messed up when they're called upon to bring those first karbonas. We need to have this amazing that there's people doing everything that you can imagine. Okay, lovely. Okay, so now getting back to our Mishnah. So our Mishnah said that the Gir Anasha is both on the Yarech Shel Yamin and on the Yarech Shel Smol. Now, that would mean that our Mishnah is the Lok Reb Yehuda. Which, of course, is what we said before. That was one of the reasons that we were upset about the Taina that the Mishnah is going to work out because of the Chumrah. And we said, well, but that's only true according to Rabbi Yehuda. And then this is the proof that the Mishnah can't be like Rabbi Yehuda. The Tanya, we learn in the Braita, we'll see more of this in the Mishnah later, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Eino Noheg Ela Ba'achat. The Gita Anosha only is actually on one of those thighs. Now, it's more reasonable that Hadat Machra'at et Shel Yamin. That's what the simple meaning is of Hadat Machra'at. What would this be no Geam when you say, I mean, like, what do you mean, Hadat Machra'at? What's logical about that? Well, remember that the Gita Anosha is based on the fact that the Soros Shel Esav in the battle with Yaakov Avinu, the Torah describes it as a wrestling match, right? So if it's a wrestling match, that means that you have a right to imagine it, la halacha, as if it were an actual wrestling match, just a plain, simple, physical wrestling match, okay? So if you watch a wrestling match, then the opponents generally will face each other. One guy will grab the other one, put his hand around him, and try to disable him. So if
maybe a growth and grip are the same word.
Oh wow, that's interesting. But that's boxers. All right. Well, PK wouldn't matter. He would say that's fine. Anyway, so getting on to Yaakov and Esav. So we assume that if we've got these two wrestlers facing each other, so then that means that the Saros Shel Esav would be using his hand that was facing Yaakov's left side. His right hand, of course, would be, I mean, he's probably a righty if he's a malach, right? So he would put his right hand around Yaakov Avinu, which means that his right was facing Yaakov's left. And when he puts it all the way around and grabs his thigh, he is grabbing his right thigh. So that would mean that the damage would have been done to the right thigh. That would be the actual way that he would derive it. But the question is, when he says hadat machrat, what does he mean hadat? Does he mean mifshap shitale? So Iboilu, it's clear to him, because when he says dat machria, he doesn't mean it's just like a boich svara, you know, it seems to me like, no, he actually means that taking the pasuk, and we'll see where he would get it from the pasuk, it means the dat that the Torah is teaching me is from the pasuk, that it really means the right. So then he would be saying, then the Torah tells us it's the right. Or is actually Rabbi Yehuda Misupak, der Masvuki Misafkele. I'm not sure, but what I'm saying is that it seems reasonable that it would be the right. But I mean, just because it seems reasonable doesn't mean that that's the way it is. As we've seen, I mean, yeah, it seems reasonable. And he just means dat noted. I'm leaning in that direction. Noted means to actually to lean. I tend towards that direction. Oh, that I could see from the Mishnah in Masechet Pesachim. Because it says there that the atzamot, the gidim, and the notar of the korban Pesach that you didn't get to eat, they are burned not the next morning. They are burned on the morning after Pesach, the first day of Pesach. So on the 16th of Nisan. And we wanted to know, when it says Hagidim, what type of Gidim are you referring to exactly? Hani Gidim Maya Vidatayu. Do you mean edible Gidim? Gidei Basar? Why weren't they eaten? Lichlinu, they should have been eaten. I mean, if you're telling me you didn't get around to eating it, well, that's just notar. I mean, we mentioned notar, but it would be no different than any other notar. So, igide basar lichlinu. And if you just didn't get around to it, and you ran out of time, the idi tur, so then it's included in the din of notar, must refer to specific non-edible gidim, such as the gide tzavar. Let's say that's what you would think, maybe, and you can't eat them. Well, I don't understand. If you can't eat them, and you're telling me la halacha they're non-edibles, so then they should have been thrown in the garbage. There was never a chiyuv to eat them in the first place. You're not mechuyuv to eat things that are inedible, obviously. So, ilav basaninu lishdinu. Why do we have to burn them? They should have just been thrown out. And if we're talking about the Gidei Tzava, it wouldn't work. So what would it be? The Amar of Chista, there's only one answer. It's got to be referring to the Gid Anasha. Lo nitzucha ela le Gid Anasha. And so, I mean, the Gid Anasha, I don't get it. The Gid Anasha should be thrown out. It's not edible. I mean, why are we burning it? You weren't mechuyev to eat a Gid Anasha, were you? But wait. Suppose you hold like Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Yehuda says it's only one side that's the Gid Anasha. So, okay, how does that work? I'll tell you how it works. If we understand Rabbi Yehuda to be unsure about whether it's the right side or the left side, now that is a good explanation that Rav Chisda gave of the Mishnah. So, I amrit bishlama, that actually Rabbi Yehuda did not know for sure. And it was sapuki misafkele shapir. Okay. Then it adds up. Because, look, one of them is definitely kosher, so I can't throw it out. But I can't eat either of them because I don't know which one. So I have to burn both of them because this may be actually basar. I don't know which one it is. So in order to be yotzei, I can't just throw them out. I'm going to need to burn it as if it's nota. That's why we mention it. But if you're going to tell me, no, Rabbi Yehuda knows exactly which side it is. So I don't understand. So what's the explanation? The one that was kosher to eat, the left side, let's say, if that's what he knew, so the left side should have been eaten. And if it wasn't eaten, it's nosa. And the one that was the right side, if that's the one that he really knows is us, should be thrown in the garbage. It's not part of the mitzvah of Achilas Pesach. So how would the answer of Rav Chisda make sense if you held that Rabbi Yehuda knew? Amravika Bar Chanina, no. It could even work out if he knew for sure. He may know, but what we're talking about over here in the Mishnah, where you would have to burn the Gid Anasha, is talking about where we got them mixed up, and we weren't sure which one was the Gid Anasha that had been from the right side, and which one had been the Gid Anasha from the left side, and Kishukur was of this Arvu. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, it still works, because we definitely have an edible Gid, and we definitely have an inedible Gid, right? So one of them is going to have to be burned, and I don't know which one. So because of that, I have to burn both of them. So it would still work, even if you hold that Rabbi Yehuda was absolutely sure. Anyway, we're going to have some additional possibilities, Bezrat Hashem, tomorrow, which we will examine if the good Lord spares us, to be Zohar, to be Loimed his Torah together tomorrow. And I look forward to that. So, Bezrat Hashem, we hope to see you.